Welcome to Within the Realm. I'm your host, Steve Garrett. This episode of Within the Realm will be a little different. As I put this episode together, we're in the midst of our response to the coronavirus. Schools have been closed for the next several weeks. Public gatherings have been limited. And just this afternoon, all restaurants in our area have been closed to dine-in service. There are a lot of directives and a lot of information, not all of it good or accurate, coming our way, and some of it changing daily. Over this past weekend, shoppers cleared store shelves of certain supplies, notably hand sanitizer and toilet paper, in an example of panic buying. A podcasting friend, Tim O'Brien, of the Shaping Opinion podcast, published an article on his blog, Changing Minds, addressing the fear and panic and ways to calm those fears during this time of crisis. Tim is an old hand at crisis management, having handled many public relations crises over the years. Tim and I discussed his articles and ways we can incorporate his advice in it in our lives during these uncertain times. Tim, you've seen yourself through several similar situations, but you make a living helping tell the story of what companies need to do. But here we face this nationwide situation with coronavirus and COVID-19. You recently wrote an article entitled, What You Can Do to Reduce Fear and Panic Right Now. What made you feel the need to write that article?
It's one of those things. For the past 2 weeks, before the hysteria really kicked in the United States over the coronavirus, I noticed what was happening in other countries, and I noticed what people were already starting to say in America. And for the past 34 years, I have handled crisis communications for clients. And as you mentioned, it's just to give you some examples, bankruptcies, major work stoppages, environmental issues, product recalls, nationwide product recalls that affected people. And in a few cases, life and death, the death of a chairman of a company or the death of four workers one time in a power plant. And so you're dealing with different situations, but you're always dealing with the potential for panic. You're always dealing with the potential for an overreaction to whatever the bad news is. And that's the common thread that I've dealt with for 34 years. And so there are some fundamentals that I approach, and anyone that does crisis management approaches the situation with. There are very basic fundamentals that you look for and you study. It's almost like if you were an emergency physician, the first goal is to stop the bleeding. So the first thing you look for if you're a crisis management professional is, where's the panic, and where's the source of the panic, and why is there panic? Because you can't accomplish anything if people are hysterical. So you have to address that first. And my concern over the past 2 weeks prior to this was that the media, primarily the media and primarily politicians and certain elected officials and public figures, they were doing nothing to calm fear. In fact, they were doing things to inflame the fear. The media was doing certain things to get people to watch. They were sensationalizing the spread of the disease and the sense of despair. They were almost trying to create it. When you saw those rushes on supplies at grocery stores, including most notably toilet paper, it's almost like the media achieved that. They created such hysteria that people were afraid that they wouldn't be able to get basic supplies. That was my biggest concern, that in the past you might have seen a news operation work actively to calm the public sphere, to create a sense of order where there is chaos. Because the problem is, when there's a threat, and it's a real threat, it's even more important to calm people's fears. You don't play into people's fears. There's this common assumption now that if you tell people that it's not a good idea to panic, people think you're not taking the situation seriously, when it's exactly the opposite. You're taking this situation seriously, and the first thing you need to do is calm the public's fears. And there are five ways to do that that I mentioned that are very basic and very simple. And they're things that I've done for 34 years every time there's been a crisis.
So let's go over those five items that help reduce fear and panic. First one listed here is to not speculate or believe those that do. Can you elaborate on that?
Sure. That is the number one rule in crisis management. You never speculate. Let's say that there's an airplane that crashes and people say, well, do you think this could have been a problem with the gears, or do you think this could have been pilot error? Well, those are common questions you have in a situation like that. And the best answer is we can't speculate on that until we know. Because if we do speculate on that, that feeds rumor and conjecture, and that feeds fear, and that feeds panic. And it gets people thinking that maybe when they get on a plane, it's going to happen to them too. So you don't want that if you don't know that, if that's not a fact. So you don't speculate. And in this situation with the pandemic, not only do you not speculate yourself, but you don't believe others who are speculating. And I used an example because it was a prime example. There was a group of university researchers out of California. In one of their reports, the first thing they said was they didn't have enough data to assess the situation. And then in the very next sentence, they speculated that there were 150 million Americans that could be infected. So they had no facts, yet they still guessed that there would be this worst-case scenario of 150 million Americans infected. They did that because that's a PR technique, and it's how you get your own brand name into a story that it has nothing to do with your brand name. So if you're a hospital and you want to get your name out there, you have your doctor's comment on the coronavirus. And if they're saying responsible things, that's not going to hurt anything. In fact, it might help. But if you're speculating that people could be infected who actually may not be infected, well, then that's irresponsible, and that's not a way to manage a crisis. So don't believe people who are out there throwing numbers around if they can't substantiate it. That's a very irresponsible thing to do. So when people ask you if you want to minimize fear and panic, don't speculate yourself. You don't know how this will turn out. You can't assume that what happened in Italy is going to happen where you live, because Italy is such a different place. It happened at a different time. The dynamics are so much different than where you live, so you can't assume that, so it's best not to speculate.
What's the next item that we need to be mindful of?
The next tip that I provided was, and it kind of relates to the first tip, I said don't speculate. Well, also, don't believe anyone who is not an infectious disease expert who is already working on this situation, because that's the other thing. There are lots of infectious disease experts out there, but they may not have the information that the CDC has or that the World Health Organization has. And those are the people on the tip of the spear right now. They have the information. They understand COVID better than anybody right now because it's their primary responsibility. So my recommendation on tip number two was very simple. Don't believe the politicians. In fact, I saw yesterday an Ohio politician guessed that there were 100,000 people in the state who had the disease, and then she had to walk that back because she said it was her own personal guesstimate based on no facts. So she went public in a press conference and said that, and then she had to walk it back. So don't believe anyone who's not an infectious disease expert on this case. So the best people to believe would be the people at the CDC and the World Health Organization. And if you really want to keep it simple, my best recommendation there would be to go to their websites and get your information from them, and don't allow the politicians or certain media people to give you numbers and information that might not be accurate.
The third tip, though, Tim, I think is where you start asking us to do a little bit more. Third tip is don't justify emotional decision-making, but to focus on the facts to date. And that requires a little bit more of us than the previous two tips, I believe.
It does. It does. That's really where the rubber meets the road for each of us, because it's easy to say don't speculate, and that's easy not to do. But in the end, you're going to have to look at this situation and make decisions in your personal life. and you're going to send certain signals to your family members or people who you might manage at work, and you have a decision to make. How do you want to project your own feelings at a time like this? Do you want to project worry and fear, and do you want that to be contagious? And what good will that do? Or do you want to basically calm other people and be a calming force? And that doesn't mean to cover up things that might not be serious. But if you want to be a calming force so that people can deal with the crisis better, then I talk about not justifying your emotional decision-making and keeping your focus on the facts. And that is a hard thing to do when there's so much emotion in a situation like this. But a crisis, I said, is not a competition to demonstrate that you care. You should care, and that should be obvious, but it's not a competition. It's not like you can judge other people because they don't seem to be as rattled as you are, so they're not taking it as seriously as you are. That's a mistake. So the key, if you want to be that person who's not as rattled and you don't want to send that signal, you should probably focus on the facts. How many people have the disease? Is it a lot? How many people near you have the disease? I've seen people look at websites and get scared because somebody in the town over has been diagnosed with having coronavirus. And I talked to this one person, and I said, well, how do you feel? And she said, well, I'm fine. I said, well, keep your focus on that. That's a fact. You're fine. Your family is fine. And if you follow the guidelines that the CDC provides, there's a good chance you will be fine. And those are facts that you need to pay attention to. So don't overreact to the news that somebody two towns over or one town over might have been diagnosed with it. And also focus on the fact that the vast majority of the people that are getting the disease are recovering from it. That's a fact. And it's very easy to focus on anecdotal information or simply fear and let that be your guide. And that is how you move into this panic mode. And that's how that becomes contagious. But if you focus on the facts, you will find that it'll be a lot easier to control the things that you can control, and you will be less panicked yourself.
As a person who has managed several crises in the business world, what would you say to somebody that would reply to what you just said as, well, but the facts are changing, sometimes daily?
They absolutely are, you know. I think the biggest risk in this, and it is the source of the biggest fear, that is the legitimate source of fear, is the experts are saying that the coronavirus has a potential multiplier effect. So if one person has the disease today and one other person gets it, it doesn't mean that a third person will get it. It'll go from 2 to 4 to 8 to 16 to 32. And very quickly, it can explode into large numbers of people. And once it does that, it multiplies in a compounding way. It's a mathematical issue. And I think that's a legitimate concern. But I think the flip side of that is, because the infectious disease experts know this, they've already instituted these serious measures that we're now following. It's not just they've shut down businesses. They've shut down non-essential businesses. They've told people to stay home. They are taking very aggressive measures to counter that multiplier effect. I think at the end of the day, we have to trust them. We have to trust the experts, and we have to follow the guidelines that they're providing us. And I think we also have history to look back on, because in 2009, we had the swine flu. And a lot of people don't even remember the swine flu or the panic around the swine flu, because generally there wasn't any panic. But the swine flu, if you look at the statistics of it, the coronavirus has a long way to go before it would even be on a par with what the swine flu did in the United States. 13,000 people died from that back then. And I think the reason there was less panic back then than there would be now is that we didn't have social media the way we do now, where information just moves at the speed of light, and so does panic with that. I think also there was a general feeling back then that when people saw the experts asking the public to do certain things, they followed the guidelines and they trusted that things would work out. And now we can look back at that and we can say that, yes, it was a very serious situation, but Americans did not panic. And because they did not panic, they were able to follow the health authorities' guidelines at the time. And the life cycle of that pandemic did end, and the world did return to normal. So we can look back at history, and we can say, if we do all the right things, it will work out. It can work out. And we don't need to panic, and this is not necessarily a never-ending problem.
Your fourth tip, something you've already alluded to, don't assume what happened elsewhere will happen where you live.
Yes, I think that's very much tied to what we see on the Internet. People will log on to the Internet. They'll see a tweet or a Facebook post or an Instagram video, and they'll see panic in the streets of Wuhan, China, or they'll see the empty streets in Rome, Italy, or they'll see emotional videos from Paris or Sydney, Australia, and they'll assume that that kind of thing can happen where they live because it's happening elsewhere, and why not? Well, here's the advantage that Americans have. The advantage we have is that the disease has already started to spread around the world, and the United States is actually late to this process. And because of that, our infectious disease experts have had the chance to study the disease. They understand it. They're already working on treatments and vaccines that these other countries did not have the opportunity to do. We have an unbelievable healthcare system, and we have great protocols in America to respond to these things. And even on the issue of testing, it's been widely reported that there haven't been enough tests to go around in the United States. But even on that issue, the United States is catching up quickly, and it has not led to any major adverse effects. It hasn't contributed to the crisis itself. So if the tests are more widely available, there are two things that will happen. One is there will be more testing, so more people will be diagnosed as having coronavirus. That's a fact. I think that's a pretty safe assumption. And more people will be also diagnosed and said to have recovered from it. So that's not a bad thing. We learn more about the disease, and we learn about its spread, and we can track it. Now, what we will also learn is that what has happened in Italy and what has happened in China, it probably won't happen the same way in certain states and in certain counties and in certain cities. It may still happen, but it won't happen in the same way. And you can't just assume these serious situations that you see on viral videos are going to happen where you live. It's best not to worry about that because it may never happen. It's the old adage, why worry about something that may never happen to you? And best to focus on the facts, as I said earlier, not speculate. Focus on what measures you can take yourself and what the authorities are telling you to do, and make sure that you're following their guidelines. And if you're doing all of those things, you probably won't have to deal with it in the same way that the people in China have had to deal with it.
That brings us to your last tip, which I think is probably an important one for reducing fear and panic. What is that last tip, Tim?
The last tip is one, and this is definitely, I guess you could say, it's in my wheelhouse, because I deal with public relations issues, and I understand the media. I know how they work. I know why they work the way they do. I can tell you this, that cable news exists to be watched. And the best way to get watched during a ratings period or any time is to stoke fear. If they're not stoking fear, sometimes they're not doing their job. So if cable news has a pandemic to cover, they will try to stoke fear. And they will do that because they know it will force you to watch, and they will make you angry, and they will make you afraid. What you can do is turn it off. You can turn off the cable news. It doesn't mean you'll miss important information. There are other ways to get important information without watching cable news 24/7. You can take a break from social media, because it's the same thing there. People who want their tweets to be shared or their Instagram posts to be shared will do the same thing. They know that if they can create fear or anger, you will share their posts, and that's what they want. So you can quit doing that. You can quit looking at that. Another thing you can do, and this is something that a lot of people are doing right now, they're seeing how the stock market is reacting to the current events, and it is definitely volatile, to say the least. But if you have a long-term financial plan, stock markets go up and down, and this is definitely a down period, but that doesn't mean it's going to stay down. And if you have a long-term plan, you'll do yourself a favor by not looking at the stock market every day and not overreacting to it. It's best to just make sure that you have a plan, you're talking to your advisor, and then take a break. Don't look at it every day. So don't look at the cable news 24/7. Don't watch your social media feeds all day long. And don't look at the stock market day to day. Give yourself a break. It's a mental health break, really, for you. And if you really want important information, you can subscribe to feeds so you can get regular emails from the CDC. These are the authorities. They're required to give you neutral, objective, accurate, responsible information when you need it. And they will do that. So if you want to get good information, follow the CDC, go to their website. And if you want to pace yourself, do it maybe once a day at the end of the day or in the morning. And then give yourself a break the rest of the day and don't get sucked into watching cable news for every story. Because one thing that cable news has to do to get you to watch is they have to get you to keep watching. And so all day long, they will fill their programming with filler. It is called filler. And it's non-substantive information to get you to keep watching. And they do that with opinion, talking heads on talk shows, speculating, trying to stoke fear, trying to get you to keep watching, and also trying to politicize the situation too, because that also creates anger and fear. And that's a great formula if you want to get good ratings if you're in cable news. But if you individually do not want to get sucked into that emotion, you can take a step back and take a break, take a mini vacation from cable news, and you will feel better. I guarantee you'll feel better if you do that.
Well, that certainly sounds like the kind of advice we need presently. If someone wanted to read your article in full, where could they go to do that?
They could go to my blog. It's very simple. It's obriencommunications.com, O-B-R-I-E-N, communications.com. It will be on the Changing Minds blog on that, on the right column of that website, and they can find it there. And I'd be glad to talk to anybody after they've read it. I'd be glad to hear opposing opinions as well. Anybody that might want to disagree, I'm glad to talk to people about this because it's important, and I think it's important right now that people do have the chance to talk to each other and work this out themselves and work this out, and we can all work this out together.
Well, Tim, I think you've given us some good items to think about. Thanks for coming on today.
I appreciate it, Steve. I always love listening to your show, and I appreciate just knowing you over the years and everything that you do.
Good words from Tim O'Brien. Let's review his 5 tips for helping us reduce fear and panic. Number 1, don't speculate. Number 2, trust the experts. Number 3, don't justify emotional decision-making. Focus on the facts. Number 4, don't assume what has happened elsewhere will happen where you are. And number 5, turn off the cable news, take a break from social media, and quit looking at the stock market. Good words indeed. We'll post a link to Tim's article on our website, withinpodcast.com, or find it at obriencommunications.com. O'Brien is spelled O-B-R-I-E-N. You'll also find one at our social media sites on Facebook and Twitter. If you suddenly have plenty of time at home, check out all of our episodes on your favorite podcast provider. There are plenty of other great shows, like the Shaping Opinion podcast, that you'll find informative and entertaining. If you found this episode to be helpful, share it with your friends. We've got a ways to go, and we're all in this together. And as always, thanks for listening.